Ljubljana, Bratislava, Amsterdam,
Warsaw,
Bucharest. This is Network Europe, a partnership of the continent's international broadcasters. This month, we're coming to you from Paris. Hello, I'm Sarah Elzis. This week, we take a look at where Polish troops will end up in 2008. The new government is pulling out of Iraq and focusing elsewhere. We'll hear about a program to keep drug addicts off the streets of Utrecht in the Netherlands.
In the city mall, we're gathered about 800 drug addicts and homeless people. And it was like Dante's hell. It was horrible.
Czechs can't seem to get rid of their mobile phones. Those stories and more, including our weekly Brussels briefing, plus a new clue for this month's quiz question. So stay tuned. We first turn to Poland. When the Polish Liberal Party won in October, one of the first decisions the new government took was to withdraw the country's troops from Iraq by the end of this summer. The move has been approved by the president. That doesn't mean that Polish troops won't be stationed around the world on other missions, though. Mikhail Kubicki of Polish Radio's External Service reports.
3,500 Polish troops are taking part in military missions around the world. Until very recently, by far the largest contingent was that in Iraq, where Poland had sent 2,600 soldiers at the start of the US-led operation. Since then, the number of Polish troops there has been reduced to 900. They are to return home by the end of October. According to Aleksander Kaczorowski from the Polish edition of Newsweek, Afghanistan is now the most important task to tackle.
Especially if we can see what is going on in Pakistan. The death of Benazir Bhutto and probably... we don't know, maybe even civil war. It will have a huge impact on the situation in Afghanistan, where we still got our troops and we'll have more and more.
The Warsaw government has announced that the Polish contingent of 1,200 troops will be strengthened this year by an additional 400 soldiers. Interviewed by Polish radio, Defense Minister Bogdan Klich said that Poland would like to take over sole responsibility for the Paktika province, which borders with Pakistan, instead of having its troops scattered in several provinces. In this way, the Polish national flag will be more visible.
It would make more sense from the perspective of concrete efforts of our presence in Afghanistan. Participation in military missions is only an instrument to achieve a certain aim. This aim is the increase in credibility of a given country in the international arena, as well as to make it easier to achieve foreign policy goals. This country should benefit from such a mission in both long-term and short-term perspectives.
Poland is to contribute 350 troops to the EU mission in Chad. This is about 10% of the entire contingent. The government's decision on the Chad mission has provoked much criticism from the opposition. A leader of the Left and Democrats Party, former Defense Minister Jerzy Majdziński.
It would be good to have more information here, like what it is exactly that the Polish troops will be doing in Chad, who are we going to be there with, whose orders will we take, and who will we cooperate there with, and who will be in charge of this operation.
Military experts are unanimous as to which foreign mission will be of particular importance for the Polish armed forces. Wojciech Łuczak of Raport Military Magazine.
Chad is important for the unity of the Union, to demonstrate that United Europe is able to do something military as a single force. But from the military point of view, the most important is the Afghan mission, because this is proof of reliability for the alliance, and we are basing our security on the alliance, so this is also good and important for our security.
The Polish mission in Afghanistan is to figure prominently on the agenda of the Polish defense minister's imminent visit to Washington.
That was Mikhail Kubicki from Polish Radio's External Service. Poland's defense minister is due in the U.S. later this month. Along with speaking about his country's foreign missions, he'll also be talking about a missile defense plan that Washington hopes to set up against the threat of long-range missiles coming from Iran. The plan involves installing 10 interceptor missiles in Poland and a radar system in the Czech Republic. The previous Polish government had agreed in principle on the program, but the new government has indicated that it may not be quite as gung-ho. Whatever gets decided, you'll likely hear it here on Network Europe. This is Network Europe. I'm Sarah Elzis in Paris. Turning from Polish foreign affairs to local issues in the Netherlands. The city of Utrecht has found an interesting way to keep drug addicts off the streets, give them housing, and allow them to keep taking drugs. Richard Walker of Radio Netherlands Worldwide has more.
It used to be a pretty common feature of larger cities in Holland, drug addicts hanging around at stations. Many found them intimidating. But it's not nearly as common these days, especially in the city of Utrecht. This is partly due to a change in the use of recreational drugs in the Netherlands. Heroin's out of fashion and used much less by young people. But it's also because of a whole new way of tackling the problem of long-term addicts. So what's the secret of this success? Rob Kersemarkers from the Jelinek Clinic.
Of course, young people do use drugs, but point is that they don't use heroin anymore. They have seen all those drug addicts in the streets, and they have seen those characters, and they see them as losers in society, and young people, they don't want to be a loser.
So that explains young people avoiding heroin, but what about those who were hooked on it long term?
You have two groups of addicts. You have a group of addicts who are able to stop and to start a life without using drugs again. But there is also a very big group for whom that is almost impossible. They have become chronic addicts. And we have said, okay, we are not going to make you stop using. We are giving you as much care as possible. So not cure, but care, in fact.
In Utrecht, they've taken the idea of care a step further. There, they offer chronic addicts a place in a hostel where they can spend the rest of their lives and take drugs whenever they want. Annette van der Akker of the Utrecht Health Service told Radio Netherlands' Marijke Vandenberg that this approach was born out of need.
We had a big problem in the centre of Utrecht. In the city mall, we gathered about 800 drug addicts and homeless people. And it was like Dante's hell. It was horrible. And they thought of a big plan to have shelters for the people in the center of the city. Things went well beyond expectation.
What are you doing different from all the other initiatives here in Holland?
Well, what we're doing differently is realizing that somebody who's been addicted for such a long time, that it's no use to oblige him or her to stay away from drugs. That's no longer possible. People are in pain, and drugs are so much needed to repress that pain that that is not the point where you should start. You should just accept it for what it is, and we consider it a sort of chronic disease. So in the center we had those shelters where people could use. Well, that made a big difference because they were no longer using on the streets.
The amazing thing is, and you can hear it in the background, we are in the centre. It's not hidden somewhere in the countryside, it's really in the city.
Yes. In the beginning, they didn't like the idea of having living quarters of addicts near their homes, but these people are citizens of Utrecht as well. We have to take care for them. They are the weakest part of our population, and they belong to us.
Remarkably, the hostel is in central Utrecht, not out in a distant suburb. But it remains to be seen whether this successful strategy will be taken up all over the country.
That was Richard Walker from Radio Netherlands Worldwide. From drug addicts in public housing to, well, the other end of the scale, perhaps. A few years ago, Sweden's Ingvar Kamprad made headlines. The founder of the furniture chain IKEA was proclaimed the richest man in the world, surpassing Microsoft's founder Bill Gates. Well, he's not Sweden's only rich man. Salvatore Grimaldi is the richest immigrant to Sweden. Grimaldi Industries is one of Europe's top bicycle manufacturers. It owns brands like Monarch, Crescent, Gitan, and the Italian Bianchi. Grimaldi's story reads like one of those How to Become a Millionaire guides. Move to a foreign country, buy businesses, sell businesses. Radio Sweden's Jasna Karlin visited the self-made mogul.
I was born in Italy, and I was 7 years old when we emigrated to Sweden.
What are your memories of Italy?
Honestly, I don't have big memory, but my heart is still Italian, and I will always be Italian, and I'm very proud to be Italian.
In the early 50s, when Sweden, with its war-intact industry, was crying for manpower, Salvatore's parents left Italy, recruited by a Swedish company. They joined thousands of imported industry workers who were building modern Sweden. Eventually, they went into shoe business and owned a store, Grimaldi Skor, but they didn't venture further than that, unlike their son.
I started working for Volvo in Köping, where they make gearboxes. I was a very highly specialized worker in the grinding machines. So finally I found out I was the best grinder in Volvo. And why should I not take the chance to buy a second-hand machine? And from that I built up a subcontract workshop. I established my own business when I was 24 years old. Every day was a very, very exciting day for me because I loved this. I had this in my blood. I was an entrepreneur and I like to develop myself, my family and my business. And very soon I also start buying companies in very bad shape. And I try to make them turn around. And then I start to buy a company, a good company, and try to develop the companies. And then I sold also some very successful company, and I made a business with the largest banker in the world.
But you make it sound so simple. Buy a company, fix it a bit, and sell it off.
My way of seeing things is to simplify everything and try to make it simple. I will always try to create new things in a very simple way.
But why the bicycles? What attracted you there?
I got an offer. A company wanted to sell the stake of it. And I took over the stake from them. And my strategy was very, very simple. I want to be one of the best in the bicycle, and the largest also in Europe.
The dream came true. Now Salvatore Grimaldi's assets amount to 1.6 billion krona.
That was Radio Sweden's Jasna Karlin reporting.
Ma petite entreprise connaît pas la crise. Panoui et l'exil, le trésor satiné.
This is Network Europe, a partnership of the continent's international broadcasters. Coming to you this week from Paris, I'm Sarah Elsis. Still to come, Roma culture is being threatened by development in Istanbul, and Czechs have too many unused mobile phones gathering dust in their closets. But first, our weekly Brussels briefing. The focus this week was on Slovenia. Yes, the country that took over the rotating presidency of the Union last week. All 27 commissioners gathered in Ljubljana this week, the capital of Slovenia, for its first meeting with the new presidency. While Kosovo's top of the European Union's agenda, the Serbian province may soon well declare unilateral independence. RFI's correspondent Quentin Dickinson, who was in Ljubljana for the commissioners' meeting, says that Slovenia doesn't seem to see eye to eye with the Union. He says they don't seem to have consulted much with their European colleagues on the issue. The message, he says, was muddled.
The Prime Minister himself mentioned that Kosovo was not the major issue in the Western Balkans, but he was very much more worried about Bosnia and Herzegovina. This is not the official line seen from Brussels, and so Mr. Janša had to backpedal somewhat on that 48 hours afterwards.
It sounds like it may have been kind of a disappointing meeting then.
Well, it was in many ways, but this is a very difficult number of issues to tackle. Kosovo is linked to Serbia, obviously. Now, Serbia is a different matter because Serbia has initialed a stabilization and development agreement with Brussels, and now this agreement has to be officially signed. And the signs are that a number of member states are not happy about this, since they feel that as the previous Prosecutor General at the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia in The Hague, Carla Del Ponte, pointed out many times she was not satisfied with the amount of cooperation on the part of the present Serbian authorities with the tribunal. Therefore, it is felt in The Hague, that is the Dutch government, and in the Scandinavian capitals that Serbia cannot sign at this stage. On the other hand, of course, there are people in Brussels, and this has not really been understood by Ljubljana, who feel that there's a trade-off. In other words, go to the Serbian and say, all right, Serbs, you let Kosovo go off lightly, you don't protest more than necessary, and we'll let you in onto the association, and some years after, you can actually apply for full membership of the European Union. How do you feel about it? But there again, there's not unanimity among member states, and the present Slovenian presidency is going to find it very difficult not even to find a solution to this, but just to hold Europe together and try and speak in one voice and have one single policy, however modest it may be.
So this does have repercussions just for Europe in general and the unity of Europe.
Well, a weak presidency is a weak Europe. I mean, this has been demonstrated time and time again. And unfortunately, the Slovenian government is in a very weak position. Their candidate for the presidency of Slovenia was ousted, and an opposition figure of some weight was voted in. And they're heading for general elections before the end of this year. And the outlook for the present government is not very good. They appear to be very much more concerned about using the Slovenian presidency of the Union as an election campaign issue to show just how good they are. But this is a very bad way to start out a presidency by any account.
That was Radio France International's Quentin Dickinson in Brussels. He was just back from accompanying the European commissioners to their first meeting with the Slovenian presidency in Ljubljana. So we've been hearing about the Balkans and countries on the border of the European Union. Some may well be part of it someday. Another border-type country is Turkey. But this story isn't about the battle over Turkey's EU membership, though goodness knows there is one. It's about the Roma community there, which has been in Istanbul for almost 1,000 years. Roma people in Turkey have been through wars and sieges, but today they may well be facing their toughest challenge yet, a massive property boom in Istanbul fueled by European investors and the oil money from Middle Eastern and Russian speculators. There's new development all over the city. As Deutsche Welle's Dorian Jones reports, such development could mean the destruction of Europe's oldest Roma community.
Local Roma singing about their traditional home in the Sulukule district of Istanbul. For centuries, such music accompanied by traditional belly dancing have filled the streets day and night. But today, the music is giving way to the sound of destruction. A centuries-old house being destroyed as part of the modernization of this ancient part of the city. Watching is Hache Fogel. She runs a local Roma community center. The destruction of another house is a further setback to her campaign to save the community. She admits she's fighting a losing battle.
They destroyed here, these houses.
What are these numbers written on all the houses?
They put them and then later they will destroy these houses.
Every house has a number?
Yes, every house is the number. All houses will go, and 1,000 years Roma people live there, and it's very important about Roma culture.
Our walk ends at the local tea shop, which is also a center of opposition to local authorities' plans to redevelop the area. The Roma people here have hit hard times, even before redevelopment. A decade ago, a conservative mayor shut down all the centuries-old elege, or entertainment houses, where Roma people used to entertain locals to the early hours of the morning with music, drink and dance. The loss of income has devastated the community, with most people now living on an income of less than $100 a month. Like Kadi Halac, having watched his home destroyed, he now lives with friends and says he has little hope for the future.
We're not against the restoration of this area. We just don't want to be forced out of here. My family has lived here for 800 years. We Roma people have lived here for centuries. Our traditions and customs are respected here. But now my home has been destroyed, and now I'm told to live far away on the outskirts of the city, where the people don't want us and I can't find work. They are destroying not only our homes, but our very existence.
Roma such as Halaç are resisting, taking their protest to the local mayor's office. Their plight has even reached Brussels, with European parliamentarians pressing Ankara to reconsider. But the local mayor, Mustafa Demir, argues the city has to modernize.
Orayı dolaştığınızda, gezdiğinizde, sizin de işte ilk intibanız.
When you walk around this area, there's much misery and poverty, and it is also a very important area culturally and historically. So there is an urgent need for redevelopment. And for the people who cannot afford the new houses, we are providing alternative housing. This is the reality of every redevelopment. You cannot keep everything the same.
Istanbul is in the grip of a massive property boom, fueled by a cocktail of Arab, Russian and European investment, which has seen property prices increase tenfold in 5 years. The Istanbul authorities are also rushing to redevelop the city ahead of 2010, when Istanbul will be the European capital of culture. But such celebration of culture is beyond Kadi Halaç. I met up with him again as he ekes out a living selling grilled sausages outside the remains of his destroyed house. He says by 2010, Roma culture in Istanbul will be lost.
Çok kötü görüyoruz. İnsanlık açısından çok kötü görüyoruz.
It's very bad for everyone, for our people, for humanity. There always used to be music played here, and even though we were poor, we were proud of our community. But they are slowly forcing us all out. Soon there will be nothing left.
The music and culture of the Roma has survived centuries of wars and conquests in a city at the crossroads of East and West. Now in the face of property developers and speculators, this traditional community is paying the price of modernization. Dorian Jones, Deutsche Welle Radio, Istanbul.
Well, it's not centuries-old culture, but modern-day technology. Czechs are holding on to an inordinate number of unused mobile phones. One agency estimates that people could have up to 8 million of them gathering dust at home. They keep them for sentimental reasons, perhaps, when they really ought to be recycled. Radio Prague's Ian Willoughby has more.
Czechs are mobile phone mad. In fact, the Czech Republic, with a population of around 10 million, has over 12 million active mobile numbers. Some people have more than one mobile on the go, but many more possess old models which they never use. That's something which concerns David Benesch, director of REMA System, a non-profit organization which collects and recycles electronic equipment. They've made some rather striking calculations.
The Czech Republic achieved over 100% mobile penetration in 2006, and last year 1.3 million mobiles went out of use. We calculated that in the time since mobiles entered the Czech market, between 5 and 8 million devices have gone out of use. A small number have been collected, but that number of phones is on the Czech market.
REMA System have worked out that the millions of old mobiles out there would produce a significant amount of metals if recycled, 120 kilograms of gold and 45 tons of copper, and their batteries could produce 19 tons of cobalt, which isn't to be sniffed at. Of course, the obvious question is, why are Czechs holding on to old handsets, which they are extremely unlikely to ever use again?
I think Czechs have so many phones at home because they are small and expensive devices. We pay thousands of crowns for them and we feel really bad about throwing them out. But our attitude is that people have to get over the price and just accept that their old mobiles are of no use to them.
I myself have to admit to having two beaten-up old mobiles gathering dust in a drawer at home. But David Benesch tells me getting rid of them would be exceedingly simple.
Those mobiles can be returned as part of a collection scheme. Most sellers offer to take your old mobile off your hands if you buy a new one, and most operators offer bonuses for the return of old handsets.
That report from Radio Prague's Ian Willoughby. That brings us almost to the end of this week's program. Before I say goodbye, a second clue for this month's quiz. You need to come up with the name of a French composer whose birth 100 years ago is being celebrated in 2008. Last week, we learned that he's very religious. This week, another clue.
Je dis depuis 60 ans que je vois des couleurs quand j'entends des sons, on ne me croit pas.
That's him talking in French, of course, saying that for 60 years he's been saying that he sees colors, but no one believes him.
He described all the colors, the mixed colors he could see when he listened to some sounds.
This condition of being able to hear colors is called synesthesia. Who is this man? If you think you know, send your answer to contact@networkeurope.org. Include your name and where you listen to Network Europe. Again, that's contact@networkeurope.org. Stay tuned for another hint next week. And that's the end of the program. Make sure to visit us online at networkeurope.org for archive programs, our podcast, and to send your comments. I'm Sarah Elzis in Paris. This program was put together this week by Vanessa Letron and Fabien Meunier. Thanks for listening. The music you're hearing is Mon Trésor, sung by Titi. J'ai un crin, un cactus florentin, un cheval, des envies d'aventure. J'ai un bel védère et tout, tralalalala. Mais qu'en ferais-je si toi tu n'en veux pas? En attendant, dedans mon bloc, patiemment je répertorie une note. Le temps passé à mon friseur amassé, qu'en faire dès lors que toi tu n'en veux pas. J'ai du chien, un œil et des fusains, un joli timbre, une exquise nature. Et puis tel hiver de l'ombre, en veux-tu en voilà. Mais qu'en ferais-je si toi tu n'en veux pas? En attendant dedans mon bloc, patiemment je répertorie une note. Le temps passé à mon trésor amassé, qu'en faire dès lors que toi tu n'en veux pas? Tout jeter à la mer ou me couper un doigt. Du, du, du, du, du, du. Jeter à la mer ou me couper un doigt. Jeter à la mer ou me couper un doigt. Ah là là, oh, ah là, ah là. Le temps passé à mon trésor amassé, qu'en faire dès lors que toi tu n'en veux pas. Ah, ah, ah. Oh, oh, ah, ah, ah. Oh, ah, ah, ah, ah.